number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Loan Studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
You know, college basketball is getting a lot more fun, isn't it? A couple of upsets today as Kansas goes down to Oklahoma State and Georgetown was beaten by Xavier. You couple that with a bunch of others that we've had in college hoops. It's starting to get a little fun. I love college basketball, but the thing that bothers me always is the regular season just doesn't feel fun. It doesn't feel important. It's very localized, meaning you just end up rooting for your school to do pretty good and to give you some moments. But if you're just embracing it as a fan of the game and as a fan of the sport, you know, there's not very many great things you can rally around, because even an upset in a January game or a February game may feel good momentarily, but you kind of go, but in the end, you know, this is what I expect to see in March when it comes to the tournament. I look at college basketball now, I see a very, very wide open place. And there's going to be people going back and forth saying whether or not that's a good thing for the sport or a bad thing, because we do want some excellence. We do want a little bit of separation. But you compare that to what's going on in the NBA. We're going to talk to Josh Martin about this coming up at the bottom of the hour. Look at how many teams in the NBA realistically have a chance to win the title. It's probably three and a half if you want to give me Oklahoma City. That's about it. I mean, look at the East. Everything being equal, no injuries, no major LeBron James fell down the stairs type of thing, the Eastern Conference is going to be won by Cleveland. I don't see anybody in the East that's going to be able to beat Cleveland in a seven-game series. In the West, it's going to come down to Golden State, San Antonio. Maybe the Thunder get a few games in and surprise somebody, one or you know, the other team. But for the most part, it's a three-team race. It seems in college basketball that it is really, really wide open. And I'm not talking just four or five team wide open. It's going to be pretty wide open when we get to March. Now, maybe things tighten up a little bit. And maybe we'll find out that, yeah, maybe this was all an illusion, that some of these upsets were really just ways and wake-up calls for teams like Kansas and teams like Oklahoma and teams like Duke or whatever, and they finally fix the things that are wrong with them now. Some teams need a complete overhaul. Some teams just need a few tweaks here and there. And maybe that's the case, but I hope it isn't, because I'm kind of enjoying the way college basketball gets played. Tonight I was watching LSU and Texas A&M, because as an SEC guy, I really want to know if Texas A&M is good. And I know they have Jalen Jones, and I know Billy Kennedy is putting together a team that's really complete, really put together well. But I hadn't seen them live yet, so I was watching them tonight. Because anytime I can see Ben Simmons, I'm going to take an opportunity, because I still don't know if we're going to see them in March. They lose tonight. Texas A&M beats them tonight. I was really impressed with the Aggies. I always have to put that in context, because as far as the SEC goes, it's not very good basketball across the board. I mean, look, my school, South Carolina, has got one loss, and I'm not even sure that they're still one of the, you know, better teams in the country. But I really liked Texas A&M. And, you know, kind of bounced around a little bit, caught a little bit of the Oklahoma State-Kansas game and whatnot. But overall, I think college basketball is getting really, really fun. All right, 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. You want to get your thoughts in on a number of things tonight. We're going to try to go across the board, spend a lot of time continuing to look at the conference championship games. Coming up in the next hour two, we're going to talk to Chris Price from WEEI.com on the Patriots. And I am really interested in how the Denver Broncos are going to solve the Patriots are really healthy problem. Because when they played him in November, while Gronkowski did play, he ended up leaving the game and it hurt the Patriots as that game got into overtime. But the Patriots now, with Edelman back, an offensive line that's a little bit stronger than when they played in November, Gronkowski, of course, healthy. I look at Denver's defense and go, that's a great defense. That's a Super Bowl caliber defense. But I don't know if it's stopped Peyton Manning to give us enough chance offensively to score some points good. The Peyton Manning offense is not a put up 35 points a game type of offense. It's methodical. It's going to be a, dare I say it, game manager situation for Manning. So looking at the game, right, you're trying to get a feel for how this game's going to play out. We're still a couple of days away. We're still breaking down a lot of different kind of things. a lot of what we've got from the Patriots is simply, hey, look, Tom Brady, enough said. Well, there's a little bit more to this. With Julian Edelman back, this team is a lot better and a lot different than when they played the Denver Broncos. And also, I think one of the keys is, I think the defense for the Patriots is better than people think. And when you're already, when you take that defense and you put it up against what the Broncos are going to have to do, which is run the ball and pray that Peyton Manning doesn't make a mistake, that's a recipe that I'm not going to really like when the stew is bubbling on the pot, if I'm a Broncos fan. No, no, no. I need the offense to be able to move the ball, run the ball, kill clock, score points. You don't need to score a ton, but enough. And then maybe you can get a special teams break. Maybe you can get a turnover from the Patriots offense. Maybe you can slow down some of the things the Patriots do. I think it's just hitting hope. And that's kind of the way I'm evaluating the Patriots in this game. But it's still got that flair for the unexpected because of Manning Brady. And I think that's, look, we've had 16 of these already. And I asked the question, are you getting Manning fatigue? Because there's going to be a lot of pomp and circumstance around Manning. It's possibly his last game. I know it's going to be his last game in Denver. I don't know if he does that hang on one more year, sign a deal. I don't know. I hope he doesn't. And Brady, he'll probably just chug along for five more. Who knows? So there's going to be a lot of that retro analysis and memories and put it all into a nice shiny box. There's going to be a lot of play on let's win one for Peyton type of feel. But on the flip side of all of that pomp and circumstance, as I mentioned before, is this feeling of, well, if we've got Manning fatigue, how many of us have Brady fatigue? How many of us have Brady Belichick fatigue? How many times have we wanted to put the dagger into this football team only to have them pull it right out and use it on us? Every single time we think that there is a decline in production in this football team, they come back. Just when you think that the tide is turning just a bit, they continue to go, nope, we're not finished yet. We weren't finished 5 years ago, 4 years ago, 3 years ago, when we lost that game to Kansas City on that Monday night and you wanted to bury us and say that the Brady era was dead. We went on to win the Super Bowl. This year, you tried to take our quarterback away for four games for this deflation of football thing, fought it in court, stood together. He got it thrown out. He got to play, and we went on to rip off, what, 10 wins in a row? Again, just when we go, boy, wouldn't it be nice if somebody else was around the AFC, or at least that division, they come roaring back. If they win this game, that togetherness of Belichick-Brady will be in their seventh Super Bowl. Seven. In an era. Just an era. Joe Montana didn't go to seven. Terry Bradshaw didn't go to seven. The great Dallas Cowboy team that was put together in the early 90s didn't go to seven as a group or as a coach quarterback, Aikman, Johnson, or whatever. Belichick Brady has taken all of these players that have come through the Patriots system over the years. I mean, think about it. Think about the guys that they took to that first one in Super Bowl 36 and how the rosters just keep getting turned over and turned over and turned over and turned over and added players that have become legitimate stars. And they keep bringing this group of players to Super Bowl championships. And look at the history of the Super Bowl, and you won't find a segment like this in any of its history. And again, would you be surprised if they did it next year? Would you be surprised if they did it 2 years from now? That's what makes this run. You know it's going to end, right? It's because we know Father Time is undefeated. Always has been, always will be. eventually this guy in Tom Brady is not going to be able to throw the football. He is not going to be able to recover from injuries. He is not going to be able to get up in the morning without major aches and pains. That's what happens when you get older. But I can't see it. I can't see the finish line. And that's what makes it scary. For those of us that have been waiting for the time where the Patriots dynasty finally comes to an end. Coming up next, serious story out of the NFL or former NFL player. Speaking of Super Bowls, Antoine Randle-El 10 years ago threw an infamous pass. Now he regrets playing. His words next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night tonight. Telephone number 800-777-2907. Antoine Randle-El, you might remember him, played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. In Super Bowl 40 against the Seahawks, tight game, he threw a touchdown pass on a kind of a wild flea flicker kind of play. And today, in an interview with the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, he says that if he could go back, he wouldn't play football. Here's a quote. If I could go back, I wouldn't play football. I would play baseball. I got drafted by the Cubs in the 14th round, but I didn't play baseball because of my parents. Don't get me wrong, I love the game of football, but right now I could still be playing baseball. He talks about a life of stumbling a bit, can't really climb stairs, struggles with memory. He said, quote, I asked my wife things over and over again, and she's like, I just told you that. I'll ask her three times the night before and get up in the morning and forget. Stuff like that. I try to chalk it up as I'm busy. I'm doing a lot. But I have to be on my knees praying about it, asking God to allow me not to have these issues and live a long life. I want my kids. I want to see my kids raised up. I want to see my grandkids. I try not to even think about it too much because when you're in pain and after a while it almost gets depressing when you start focusing on it, you just have to keep moving on. Going on like it doesn't exist until it settles down. I think if I didn't play football, I'd probably live to be 120. He started a school in Virginia, and he talked about playing football as a youth and whatnot. But one of the things that he says, which is something that we've talked about a little bit, is what do we do about this if as a society? Because I don't like hearing these stories, but I don't know what else to do with it. I mean, there is a part of me that is very, 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 very sympathetic. And there's a part of me because, hey, listen, I'm a Steeler fan, and it was Super Bowl 40 was one of the highlights. Yeah, I had won a Super Bowl for the first time in forever. He was the main part of it. But one of the things that he talks about is, and it's something that is getting repeated, which is, I think football will be gone in 20 to 25 years. Now, I don't think that's going to happen. But I'm wondering, how can somebody who played, how could somebody who could be have it so part of them go through so much pain to think that in a generation, this sport will disappear? And I don't know if the sport's around in 100 years. 100 years ago, boxing and horse racing were the kings of America. They're not so much anymore. But they haven't gone away. I don't think any, you know, we haven't outlawed any major sport. We're not going to. But this is one of those stories that is starting to pop up more and more, and it really is sad. But I don't know what the answer would be. He talks about, you know, kids being bigger, stronger, faster. Well, yeah, they're probably going to get bigger, stronger, and faster as the years click on. Listen, I love that 85 Bears team, and it breaks my heart every time I see Jim McMahon on TV. He really can't remember things. And it's players like that when I read these stories that I say, well, what do I do? Because I love it. I had a great time this weekend. I was entertained. For my entertainment, four games gave me all I could handle. I don't want 15 years from now to find out that a good majority of the participants that were in those games I was entertained by can't walk upstairs at 37, 38, 39 years old. Or that at 41, they can't drive. Or at 40, they can't remember what was told to them 10 minutes before, 15 minutes before, or 2 hours before? It's sad. It's sad. But again, it's something that when I read and something I hear, I don't know why I get gravitated towards these stories. I don't know. I don't know why. Because there is a part of me that sees something like that and I'm not surprised. We went through this with Chris Borland of the San Francisco 49ers. He left. He was seeing some damage that he didn't want to participate in. He saw a future lifestyle he didn't want to participate in. And so he left. And it was impactful there for a while. There was a moment where the national conversation was, hey, this young man is walking away from millions and millions and millions of dollars. And this is the statement that he's making. And then we talk about it for a little bit. Then it disappears. It reminds me a lot of when we talked about yesterday on the one-year anniversary of Deflategate. This is what this sport does better than any other sport. Its existence sort of takes major issues and puts them on the back burner. It's funny that way. Think about the major issues that surround this sport in the off season and how they disappear once the games start. In the off season, Chris Borland announces he's going to retire. It becomes a national conversation. I know we talked about it. Most talk show hosts talked about it. Columnists wrote about it. It was on television a lot. There was a lot of analysis about it. Could this be a wave of the future? Could this be something that occurs with the youth of America? Are they going to turn away from this sport? Are they going to be influenced by these kind of decisions and choose to play baseball, maybe choose to play basketball, choose to play something else? Or will this sport continue to be played by people on a large basis? Then we talk about that and it kind of goes away and then there's something else. Think about all the other stories that surround this league during the offseason. You know what was one of the big topics last offseason and this offseason before the starts of the season was the Redskins and their name. And we need to do something about this. And there were people who vowed never to say the word Redskins, never to use it in a conversation, never to address them by that name. We're going to do this. This is a major problem. This is a major deal. The president even talked about this. There was going to be pressure on Dan Snyder to change the name. Then what happened? The games start. The season starts. Where's that story? Disappears. Deflategate, as we mentioned yesterday. This is an outrage. This is an outrage. This is something that is going to take the fabric of the league and put it into question. This takes the integrity of the sport into question. This needs to be addressed. This needs to be punished. The Patriots need to go down. Tom Brady should be banned. I can't stand it. I won't watch. If he's allowed to play, then the season starts. And now you know what we're seeing today? You know what we're seeing today? How Deflategate in the end was pretty much a joke. Dan Wetzel wrote a great column about it saying, look, science laughed at this. Silliness over air pressure in footballs. Lost our minds because of our hatred of the success of a franchise. When we know that if it was Blake Bortles, we know that if it was, you know, the Tennessee Titans, we would not have even come close to the outrage. It occurred in a championship game with the Patriots. If it had occurred for Andrew Luck, we wouldn't have been upset. If it had occurred in the championship with the Seattle Seahawks, we wouldn't have been upset. But that franchise, no. This is an outrage. But then the season started, and then people slowly started to forget just exactly what a travesty that was. I see the story of Antoine Randall, and my sympathies go out because I'm a fan of his. I'm a fan of the team he played for. I'm the fan of the team he had success with there in that Super Bowl run in 2006. But it's going to be yet another one of those, wow, football player suffering afterwards. My sympathies go out, but I don't know what the answer is. 800-777-2907 is the number. If you'd like to join us on the show tonight, we're going to switch gears and go to basketball. Josh Martin talking NBA, including that beatdown by Golden State against Cleveland. Can we read anything into it? Next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio. And YahooSportsRadio.com.
It's Tony D here on the Nighttime Yahoo Sports Radio. About once a week, we'd like to get you caught up on what's going on in the NBA as we head through the regular season and then also into the postseason. Josh Martin from Bleacher Report joins us to talk about the association. How are you, Josh?
I'm doing great. How are you, Tony?
Great. Thank you so much for your time. So the regular season game between Golden State and Cleveland could be what it actually was just a regular season game, nothing too big to take out of it. Is there anything more that we can take or should take out of that game against the Warriors?
Just that Cleveland has some work to do to get to the point where the Cavs can, you know, really feel comfortable at all as a championship contender. I mean, I think they're there just because they're clearly the best team in the East, but you know, coming out of the East is not going to be enough for this team, and certainly not going to be enough for LeBron James, who has represented the East in the finals the last 5 years, but only has, I guess I shouldn't say only, but has two titles to show for it. Clearly, there's some work to be done there. You know, defensively, the Cavs aren't quite there. I think, you know, some of their guys aren't performing so well, Timofey Mozgov in particular, but, you know, it's January. There's still a lot of time, and you figure Cleveland will be out on the market trying to see if they can make some deals to improve their team around the fringes. And
when you look at the rest of the Eastern Conference, for Cleveland to try to get a title, they got to get to the title. Or is there any realistic threat from the Bulls or the Raptors or anybody else in the East?
It's tough to pick that out. You know, you figure that Chicago has the talent on paper to do that, but you know, with Joakim Noah now out, that kind of puts them in a tough spot, since Noah's really been the Bulls' heart and soul for so long now. The Raptors are going to have to prove it, because the last two seasons they've been in the playoffs and have been knocked out in the first round. Certainly you think the Heat, with their knowledge of LeBron and their veterans, that they'll have a good shot, and they've shown at times that they can handle some pretty good teams and play very well, especially defensively. And maybe Miami is the most legitimate, but still, big picture, it's tough to see any of these other teams in the East really giving the Cavaliers a run for their money.
And talk about that improvement, because we are seeing an Eastern Conference where it is not 1-2-3 and then a whole bunch of teams below 500 filling out the rest. Has this come gradually, or is this a little bit of a surprise that the East isn't filling out its playoff roster with some below 500 teams right now?
I guess it's sort of one of these things where it's about time, you know? After all these years where the East has had so many bad teams, but that's what the draft is all about, where the bad teams are supposed to get the better picks, which means they're supposed to get the better young players, which means to develop into good teams. And certainly that's the case with Detroit, with Andre Drummond, and they traded for Reggie Jackson, so they built themselves a nice team. And but the other teams, really, Miami, Atlanta, Chicago, Indiana, Toronto in particular, these are teams that have been pretty good in recent years. But the rest of the conference, with, you know, Orlando coming on now, Washington still hanging around there, and certainly New York with Kristaps Porzingis, these are teams that are certainly improving to an extent now, where, you know, the East may not finish with 10 or 11 teams above 500, but you'd think we'll reach the finish line with 8 teams above 500, just enough to fill out their playoff spots.
Let's go to the West. We talked about Golden State and that game against Cleveland, but here's San Antonio. They've won 11 in a row. They're perfect at home. A little under the radar, but given the extent and the popularity of what Golden State is doing. But this San Antonio team, Josh, is it same old Greg Popovich, same old Spurs, maybe a couple of different contributions, or are they playing a little different?
You know, it's same old Spurs. If you mean by old, you mean, you know, the Tim Duncan, David Robinson era Spurs. They don't play as fast as they have in recent years, because this isn't really Tony Parker's team anymore. The Spurs are in the bottom 10 of the league in pace right now. They still pass the ball beautifully, and they pass the ball pretty much more than anyone else in the league, but they're doing it more in the half court, where they're running things through LaMarcus Aldridge. They're running things through Kawhi Leonard. And what's so interesting about the Spurs team, and I think what makes them so dangerous, is that even if those two guys aren't playing at a high level, and with Danny Green kind of struggling all season, they can still turn on occasion to Tony Parker to have a big game like he did against Cleveland, or Tim Duncan to come up big with some boards up front when he needs to, or Manu Ginobili coming off the bench with some strong games of his own. That there's just so many ways that the Spurs can beat you now, that you figure as the season goes along and as LaMarcus Aldridge gets more and more comfortable and as Kawhi Leonard gets more and more acclimated to being the man in San Antonio, that this team will even continue to improve. And this is already a team that leads the league in point differential.
Josh Martin, Bleacher Report, as we talk NBA. Give us an idea about Oklahoma City. Are their role players, because we always know about Westbrook and Durant, are they a more complete team than just those two guys? Is Billy Donovan doing some things different than Scott Brooks did?
There's an interesting stat I saw from Royce Young at ESPN about how the Thunder this year have 4 games of 30 assists or more, and they've had 10 of those total since 2012-2013, so clearly there's something getting through there. We've seen Russell Westbrook become much more of a passer this year, 9.6 assists, a career high for him. And they've got a really strong cast around KD and Russ, and as Cantor had a season-high 25 in Denver, he's been nice for them. And I think Cameron Payne has really come on as OKC's backup point guard. He's done some nice things for them. But at the end of the day, look, if you've got KD and you've got Russ, two of the most dynamic players in the league, you don't have to do anything fancy. Just give them the ball and let them put pressure on a defense and let everything else sort of trickle down from there.
The Los Angeles Clippers are winning a lot of games without Blake Griffin, and a lot of people look at their schedule and go, yeah, but, you know, if you look, it's not against some of the better competition in this league. Is it that simple, or is there something else going on in Los Angeles?
You know, during that 10-game win streak, the Clippers really didn't play anyone of note. And then, of course, they lost to a pretty good team to end that streak. So there's something to that. But at the end of the day, if you look at the way the Clippers are playing, I think it's more indicative than who they've been playing. Their offense in particular has really taken off since Blake's been out. It's sort of opened the floor a little bit for them with Paul Pierce at the four. You know, now instead of opposing defenses really being able to crowd the middle of the floor with Blake playing at the elbow, things are stretched out a bit more with Paul Pierce sitting behind the three-point line. That opens up more driving lanes for Chris Paul. That opens up more lob opportunities for DeAndre Jordan. So they played a bit more wide open. And certainly I think the bench has come on a lot stronger. Jamal Crawford's played well. I think Cole Aldrich has established himself as worthy of a spot in Clippers rotation. Wesley Johnson has had some nice games. And Pablo Prigioni, like Aldrich, has pushed his way into things for the Clippers all the while. Lance Stephenson and Josh Smith are sitting back. So I think the Clippers now have started to figure some things out about how they can play and what they're capable of with this roster with Blake out. But realistically, the Clippers aren't going to challenge the best teams in the West unless Blake is out there healthy and doing what he does.
You know, I know it's early and we got a lot of long way to go, but Josh, is this like a three and a half team race to the finals with Golden State, San Antonio, the Cavaliers, and then maybe Oklahoma City? Or are there some more surprises coming?
I think that's what it's going to come down to. The only other team that you would think might have any sort of shot outside of those four would be the Clippers. But, you know, the way this team has gone and, you know, the way that Chris Paul has kind of taken a step back to a certain extent this season, you wonder if they're really fit for that, but who knows? If they can find some help at three where they've been starting Luke Richard and Bamute, that might change things. But ultimately, I think it really, if you want to break it down even more granularly, it's Golden State and San Antonio at the top, and then it's Cleveland because the Cavs are probably going to be in the finals anyway, and then it's Oklahoma City, and then it's everyone else after that, which isn't really a bad thing. Because you think about most years, usually it's, you know, maybe two or three teams that you think are really capable of competing for the title. It's really not all that out of the ordinary to be down to three or three and a half teams at this point in the season who you think really have a shot at capturing the Larry O'Brien trophy.
Josh Martin, Bleacher Report. Always great talking to you, my friend. Good stuff. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Tony.
And again, three teams. I mean, look, if you want to throw in the Oklahoma City Thunder, you can. That would make it 3.5. But yeah, we're down to three teams. Cleveland, Golden State, San Antonio. That's about it in the NBA. Doesn't mean there's good storylines. I mean, if the Knicks make the playoffs, that's always something to look at. Kobe's final year and a terrible year for the Lakers with saying goodbye to Kobe Bryant. But if you're looking at titles, it's pretty much three teams, and that's it. We'll talk about that next. Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, our thanks to Josh Martin from Bleacher Report getting you a weekly update on the NBA. Let's go to James in Indiana. He's on the line. Talks Indiana college basketball. What's up, man?
Good morning, Tony D. How you doing?
How you doing? What's on your mind tonight? Big win for the Hoosiers over Illinois tonight.
Well, my team...
It's like a 40-point win or something like that tonight.
Illinois is bad.
Illinois is bad is right.
Well, IU's got one of the best point guards in the country in Yogi Ferrell.
Of course.
But the team I love the most is the University of Evansville Purple Aces.
Oh, why do you like the Purple Aces?
Well, besides being from my area, they're probably one of the hottest teams in college basketball right now.
All right, give us a little lowdown. Give us a quick thumbnail note on Evansville. Why should I pay attention to them?
Well, their coach, Marty Simmons, is a former Purple Ace, one of the best aces.
And that's the reason I should pay attention to him, because their coach went to the school?
Tony, hold on. There's more. They've got one of the top point guards in the country in DJ Ballantyne.
I know him. Yes, I know him.
And the way Evansville lit up Loyola tonight, it was, I'll tell you what, if they're not ranked in the top 25, they should be.
All right, I'll pay attention a little bit to Evansville.
I mean, if it wasn't for Wichita State, Evansville would be number one in the Missouri Valley. They're going to be a tough team to deal with no matter what tournament they're in, whether it's the NIT, one of the smaller ones. I'd like to see them in the NCAAs. Probably won't happen. Got a lot of good teams this season.
Why not? Why wouldn't they? Why, if they're one of the top teams in the Missouri Valley, win the Missouri Valley?
Well, because there's a lot of good teams in the MVC right now, and, of course, Wichita State being the cream of the crop.
Well, knock them off. Well, then punch your ticket into the tournament.
We gave them a hell of a battle in Wichita earlier this season.
That is true. I do know that.
They're 17-3 and 6-1 in the conference.
Let's see. Ballantyne is averaging, I was just looking them up. 22 points a game. 21 points a game.
Pretty good.
Did he play somewhere before? Did he transfer in? Has he always been a Purple Aces kid?
I'm not sure. I'd have to look
it up. Why does his name sound familiar? Did he do something great and I just don't remember because I'm getting too old?
Could be.
That's really good. All right, so now here's what's going to happen, because James brought up Evansville. Anytime I see Evansville in the news, I'm going to think of James. I'm going to go, oh, that's going to make James happy.
So when they're like in the Final Four, James,
if they're in the
really
Final
happy.
Four, oh my God. We'll have to send James a shirt or something.
Yeah.
Isn't the Final Four going to be in Houston this year?
Yeah.
We'll have to send you down and get him some gear.
He can be
get
our,
him some Final Four gear.
We'll bring him down and he can be our guy on the scene.
Yeah, exactly. Me and my anti-Cinderella in the Final Four, right. I'd be disappointed.
Right.
When a mid-major goes and upsets my normal North Carolina, Kansas, you know, Duke, Kentucky party that I'm so used to.
Although this year, I don't know, you know, this might be the year for a mid-major to win.
I think so, too.
Because there's no really, really good teams.
Oh, wait a minute. You think a mid-major might win the whole thing?
Well, I mean, if there is a year, I mean, there's a lot of...
Oh,
I mean,
it would be this year, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I mean.
That's possible, yeah. I don't know why I'm liking this, but I feel like I'm getting an upset every single night.
Well, did you see the Final Four teams from last year?
Kentucky, they all stink.
Yeah, they're like 11-12 combined in conference play.
Oh, they all stink. Kentucky, I'm going to say this right now. Kentucky, if people are surprised by Kentucky, don't be. This is what happens when you load up and then reload up and then reload up. Eventually, one year, you're going to be like, this ain't working out. Kentucky's too flawed right now, and it's okay. This is what they're doing. They're bringing in talent. Sometimes it produces a 40-0 stretch, and a lot of the 40-0 run, the 40-0 hype that they were on, what did they finish? 38-1.
Yeah.
Right when it was all said and done, because they lost in the finals. The reason was because the Harrisons came back, And they, and you know, they got people to return for a little bit. So they got a little bit more seasoning. But when you're loading up and just loading up, eventually you're going to roll the dice. It's not going to work. You're going to be missing something. I got fooled a little bit. I thought Kentucky's new guard oriented basketball team was going to be a little better, a little sharper. I didn't think they were going to go unbeaten because I just think that's special. When you do that, it's special and it's just hard to repeat that. But I thought that they would be, you know, a pretty good team because he's finally getting some really solid guard play and it looked really good at first. It's not really working out. They're not as dominant. They're very beatable. They're still a good team, but they're very beatable.
They were comparable to that team that was, what, an 8 seed, 9 seed?
Yeah, exactly.
Ago.
Get in, struggle, but find your niche late. Find some. And you know what? That was the year 2 years ago when they got in as an 8 seed. Remember, everyone was like, wow, look out because this is a good football, this is a good basketball team that's coming together. They had lost to Florida in the SEC championship, but they were really sharp. They were really looking good. They were playing great down the stretch and they lost that game and people were still like, that's a team you got to pay attention to. So they got an 8 seed and everyone in that bracket, because Michigan was in that bracket, Louisville was in that bracket, Wichita State was in that bracket. That was a dangerous, dangerous bracket because Kentucky was in there going, ouch, ouch, ouch as an 8. And they ended up winning it and went to the finals and lost to UConn. But one of the other stories that I'm actually liking is SMU.
Yeah.
Because they're unbeaten and they can't go to the tournament. So what do we do with them historically when when they don't have any postseason awards? They can't win the AAC. They can't win the NCAA tournament. They can go unbeaten and then they're done. That's it. They're finished. What do we do with SMU? Because the unbeaten team that we talk about in college basketball, the Indiana team, went unbeaten and won the championship. And they won the title. Kentucky needed to win the title to finish out 40-0. SMU could go whatever they're going to go and not play in the conference tournament or the NCAA tournament. Are we going to enjoy that? Or are we going to just go, eh? I think we're going to go, eh. Because you got to win something. They ain't going to win anything. Yahoo Sports Radio.